Good morning. This is Jim Colburn of Commodity Research Group. I'm here with Andy LeBeau, also of Commodity Research Group, and we're here to talk about energy markets. Along with Ed Meir, Andy and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com, where we post our monthly commodity reports, our daily metals reports, our blog, and our podcasts. We'd also like to thank Doug Stetzer, our friend Doug Stetzer of EKT Interactive Oil and Gas Training, for hosting this podcast. You can check out his daily newsletter, podcasts, and learning modules at EKTinteractive.com. Today is Tuesday, March 7th. Andy, how are you? Good morning.
Good.
We talked a month ago about energy markets on our second podcast. This is our third one. And prices are pretty much in the same place. Why don't we start off by talking about OPEC discipline, and maybe the U.S. Supply response.
Okay. OPEC has done a remarkably good job in adhering to their November production accord. Discipline has been much better than we had expected, and I think than what the market had expected. They're probably somewhere between 90 and 95% compliant with the 1.2 million barrel per day cuts. And, they've done a surprisingly good job. Net OPEC production, if you account for Libya, Iraq and Nigeria, who are not part of the Iran, not Iraq, who are not part of the accord, is probably around 32.1 or 32.2 million barrels per day. And that is on the lower side of our expectations. So OPEC production is pretty much under control. At least for now, although there were some concerns in February that exports were higher than in the January number, but that may be owing to a cargo or two that didn't make it into January's numbers. But in any event, if you look at what the call for OPEC crude is, which is what the market needs to keep it balanced or to have supply demand, say, net off. The call for OPEC crude in the first quarter, taking the IEA, OPEC, and the EIA numbers and just rounding them out, the call is 32.1. So at 32.1, 32.2, they're right there to balance the market. So a much better job than I think the market had expected. And it has helped, it has helped to keep the market steady. Remember, we have run up from mid-November, right after the late November, right after they scored this production agreement, and we have moved up from 47.50 up into the mid 50s. So the market has made a move.
So if you're saying they were balanced now, 32.1 with the OPEC call, at some point during the year, we're going to be drawing stocks and probably in a pretty good way, right?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the reasons that despite the continually high inventory in these 2 months, we really haven't drawn stocks in an appreciable way. So the market, as you look out into late in the second quarter and then into the third quarter, using these same numbers, second quarter call would be around 32.4, 32.35 to be precise. But as you get into the third quarter, you're looking at 33.3 million barrel per day call. So that's a million to 1.2 over their current production. So then you finally get a very significant stock draw. And fourth quarter, those same numbers would get you around 32.9, 33. So you're looking at a second half stock draw of 0.8 to 1 million barrels per day, which would go a long way into removing the surplus.
Now, when I look at the crude curve, where do we start hitting backwardation? I think is it East Jan is the first month that we see backwardation come into play.
Yeah, right now. It's fourth Ak-Novi, Novi D, East Jan, somewhere in there. The market is moving towards backwardation. Now that has softened somewhat because it had been somewhat earlier during the month of February. I think it was Sepak or August SEP. It has kind of flattened a little bit owing to the fact that U.S. crude stocks are at record highs. So,
right.
You know, there is some justification
for yes.
the market not going backward dated. But the market is reflecting this type of stock draw a little later. But again, we're drawing from an enormously high level.
There was a comment today on the news wires by Alexander Novak, the oil minister of Russia, saying that he expected Russia to show a 300,000 barrel decline by April. I mean, are they down 100,000 right now? Where do you put them?
They're probably down about 100 to 150 right now. Okay. Russia was one of the driving forces in this deal, along with Saudi Arabia. So I think they are going to try to comply by Novak says April, so April, May, somewhere in there. I mean, he had previously said that in the second quarter they would comply. I think they will. I think they will.
And the Libya situation is, where are we there?
Well, it's fluid. It's always fluid in Libya, but there seems to be an uptick, at least on the military side, as the opposition, and you don't even know who the opposition is in Libya anymore, really. But the opposition is in the port towns, and there is some concern that some of these ports, which were opened late last year and early this year, some of the exports may be cut. We'll see. Again, that's a
fluid
situation. But that could take, say, 100 to 200,000 barrels a day off the market. And there's also some concern in Iraq, in Kurdistan. Once again, the government and its opposition forces are struggling over the Kirkuk exports, which is about 150,000 barrels a day. And that's more of a financial struggle than anything else. But, you know, that too, there could be an interruption in Iraqi exports. Also another fluid situation for the market to be watching.
Also, I saw a story, I think it was in Bloomberg, talking about Iranian exports on one day reached 3 million barrels. It was the highest since 1979. And that was just one day. I think the average is like 2.45. But what do you see out of that?
I think Iran is they're not part of the deal.
No, I know. Right.
So I think that they are just going to try to maximize exports. I don't see their exports growing all that much though over the next couple of months. I mean, maybe 100,000 barrels a day. At most. I mean, they're pretty much running at some of their max capacity right now. So I don't think we're going to get at least over the next quarter, next few months, I don't think we're going to get that much more out of Iran.
Well, that brings us to the United States, and there's so much optimism that this response is greater than people thought. And probably gaining some momentum right now, and maybe you could enlighten us on what's going on in the U.S.
production? Well, as we've talked on these logs before, I made a wager with a well-informed crude trader that crude production would not be over 9 million barrels a day by June 30th. And I was crushed on that, as production is up to 9.03 million barrels a day already, which is about, if you take the monthly average, February's monthly average, around 9 million barrels a day, which is up about 300 from the July lows, monthly lows, average lows of about 8.7. I think production is probably set to increase. We've seen the rig counts. We've seen the rig counts grow significantly over the last few months. And now this is just the growth that we've seen thus far this year, or from fourth quarter into first quarter, is really just from a few months, is from the rigs increasing about 6 to 9 months ago. So we really haven't even seen the effects of the increase in rig counts just in the last few months, and we should see crude production up at least another 200 to 300,000 barrels a day this year, if not more. I mean, American producers have seemed to always surprise the market on the upside. And I think, you know, let's discuss that that article that appeared in, I can't remember where it appeared, but Scott Sheffield, the ex-head of Pioneer, said yes. He thought that the Permian Basin was going to be bigger than the Ghawar Field in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that was the Telegraph, I think. I put that article on our blog, because I just thought, I mean, obviously, you have to take an oil producer with a little grain of salt. They're very optimistic, but this guy, it was amazing how bullish he was. Not I'm not talking about prices, but on the Permian Basin capacity and possibilities. So,
well, he was talking in 10 years, he thought the Permian would produce 8 to 10 million barrels a day. It's producing, right, you know, like 2.3, 2.4 right now.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. That's an unbelievable call. You know what? It may be believable. Like I just said, I mean, we, in terms of what we've been able to do in this country, you know, on every measure in fracking crude, is maybe he'll be right. I mean, he had a great call on the Permian when nobody was drilling there.
Yes. I mean, it is an amazing story. If you think about, you know, the technological advances, just to get the oil, you know, out of the ground, but then getting it to market, it's an amazing story of ingenuity, for sure.
And Jim, I think you made a good point to me yesterday in talking about what Sheffield had said about prices in the $100 level, and how that was probably a bad strategy by the Saudis.
Oh yeah, he said it gave oil companies the ability to use new technologies and you know, work out all the kinks, and now that the oil prices are lower, they've got momentum with you know, once you start drilling, you learn more and more, and you do it better and better, so their cost of production has come down a lot. I can't remember what the number was, but I think he's some of his oil is coming out at like $20 a barrel. So they're doing, in some areas, they're doing really well with $50 barrel oil. So
yeah, he called 50 to 55 the sweet spot.
Sweet spot, I know. Yeah.
It's just, he also, I think it was 25 was their break-in even cost.
25, yeah. So the EIA is coming out with their monthly oil report today. And I was just wondering, do you think they're going to bump up their estimates for U.S. Oil production?
Well, they're going to have to, because they're wrong. They're wrong already.
Yeah.
Numbers at 8.8 or 8.9, I think it was, and it's over 9.
It's so, over 9, yeah.
You know, almost certainly they're going to increase the numbers.
Right.
You know, I don't think they had us over 9 until you know, later in the first half. So yeah, I think they'll get. I think it'll go up to 9-1, 9-2, maybe 9-1-5, somewhere in there. And they've been on the low side. You know, they've consistently underestimated production. So you know, they'll probably continue to do so.
Let's move over to demand. You know, maybe we could focus in on gasoline demand, because that's been a little surprising, I'd say, in the last 4 to 8 weeks. It looks like we have gasoline demand maybe 6% lower than last year. Comment on that.
Well, it can't be.
It can't be.
I think, you know, you take that 6%, which is the weeklies relative to the monthlies a year ago. And, you know, what's even more surprising, it's down like 8% from November to December versus January, February. So it can't be. I think that gasoline demand is probably soft. And in talking to some of our clients, you know, they have acknowledged that, yeah, it's soft, but it's nothing like 5% lower. I think it's probably, you know, maybe the real number is going to be 1 to 2% lower than a year ago. And the reasons for that are, you know, pump prices are higher. And, I don't know if there's any economic reasons or social.
Well, the anecdotal story is that everyone's watching Netflix, eating Domino's pizza, and not going to the empty malls anymore.
That may contribute, you know, plus you're staying home watching CNN, you know, every night.
Or Fox.
Or Fox, right. Either one. Getting back to EIA, what will happen is that they'll be revising demand upward, but that doesn't happen for till 2 months from now. But, you know, it can't be as bad as, or they'll make it up in March or April. But it leaves us, refiners did not want to get into the fix they got into last year when they made too much gasoline expecting a banner season. And they did get a good season last year. Gasoline demand was good, but they made way too much. And inventories were like 260 million. They built to 260 in January and February. And this year, the same thing happened to them, even though they made less gasoline. The yields were way down. Exports were pretty solid, so you know, this was more on the demand side. And I happen to think the inventory numbers, you know, that may be revised down a little, but that's usually the most accurate out of any of these, you know, any of these variables.
Right.
So it does leave gasoline in a pretty precarious position if demand doesn't come through in you know, this spring. Now, as we speak, the market's rallying nicely. I think it's probably, you know, it did get oversold because it really got whacked in the first few last trading days in February when they tried to offload all the winter grade, and the first days in you know, in March. It's now coming back some, but you know, that's going to be, you know, that's really going to be a function of demand, and whether or not, you know, we start seeing some decent demand numbers coming through. The other important factor is going to be exports, and exports have been pretty solid, and the main reason has been because of infrastructure problems in South America, and in particular Mexico. But Pemex is running only at like 50% capacity. If they were to get their act together and start fixing some of the refineries, clearly U.S. export demand is going to soften, and that could be a problem. But you know, it hasn't been so far.
Yeah, you mentioned that last month. I asked you if it was the economies of those areas growing, and you said no. It was infrastructure problems with refineries, and
right.
I've seen that in the news over the last month more and more. So I will keep an eye on that. I guess we'll have to find an expert in Mexico that can tell us how where they are on the repairs and stuff.
Right.
Because that's going to be important to me.
That's going to be critical. Yeah. I mean, that's a critical factor, because you're looking at you know, you're looking at the marginal barrel. going the marginal gasoline barrel, and that's going to have find a home somewhere.
World demand for petroleum and products. You think there's going to be any adjustments this month in the big three, the IEA, OPEC, and the EIA's monthly reports? There's been a lot of good economic numbers around the world, and you know, I don't know if that's going to translate into their demand numbers.
I think that I don't know if they're going to make major changes. I doubt it's going to go up. You know, even though the economic numbers have been pretty good, I think there are. The IEA mentioned yesterday that there were some headwinds on demand, and they worried about the rise in nationalism and protectionism being could be a headwind to demand. I think the world economic growth, or maybe it was the OECD yesterday was talking about that as a headwind to global growth, not necessarily the IEA. And they kept their numbers pretty steady. So in terms of global GDP growth, so I really don't think this is going to be much of a change.
Yeah, it's interesting because I just saw the GDP. The Atlanta Fed does that GDP nowcast,
right?
And they're looking for GDP growth of this quarter of 1.8%, which is a low number, but it's also the lowest estimate that they've had since they started estimating this quarter. So, I keep hearing all this good stuff about world economic growth, but it may not be in an accelerating mode. We'll have to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think it's steady, and I think China just decreased their estimates by just slightly.
Yeah,
which could affect. Obviously, it's going to affect the emerging markets. So we'll see. I don't think there'll be big changes. I think they'll be steady.
Okay. Another area of the markets that we have been looking at is the managed money length. I mean, it's. I think in Brent, it's around 500,000. In WTI, I think it declined this week, but still up close to record highs. What can we say about that?
Well, the one thing to say about that, and I think we were talking about that last week between the two of us, and I wrote in our monthly report that if you look at the WTI, the longs to shorts, last week the length was 453,000 to only 39,000 among the specs.
Right.
So no one was short the market. Nobody.
Right. Right.
That's really, you know, in terms of specs, that's an incredibly low number. It's like an 11-to-1 long to short. And usually you get that, you know, you get that type of imbalance when no one's short. You know which way the market's going, right?
Yeah. Jim? You're right. It should go down. That's right.
It should go down. It's holding. I mean, it you know, the market is holding. It looked like it was going to give way.
The only thing I say, the CFTC used to do a survey of how much of this stuff was the passive and index buying, and they don't seem to do that anymore. And I think it's that stuff is getting caught up in this managed money length. So it's not like, you know, typically you buy futures contracts, you buy them on margin, and if the market drops a little bit, it spooks a lot of people out. And also the trend followers get out, and it kind of feeds its on its own movement, and we go lower. But these guys that are, you know, if you're a pension fund, you might invest a small part of your portfolio in this passive long only strategy, and in that case, you're applying 100%. It's kind of like you're buying the whole contract. Yes, you put up its futures and you put up 10%, but the rest of it is sort of a portion to that investment. So you're not going to, in fact, it seems like these folks trade like value investors. So when the market comes down, you know, they're looking to get in. And when the market goes up, they're looking to get out. So it's not typical of what we used to see for these managed money, you know, trend follower types. And now, if you listen to some of the chat going around, we've got this reflation trade. The commodity markets, they're at least when we look at oil, it's moving towards backwardation. And you think about a passive only investment. If we have backwardation, they earn those returns because they're buying, you know, say the second month out, and when it becomes first month, they roll it. So if they're getting on that, backwardation roll, they're earning. You could have a flat price and still make money as long as you're in backwardation. And also the correlation is going away, so it's a good diversification investment for these big pension funds. So I think, you know, we're starting to see. So my point is, we're seeing record numbers, and I don't think we're going to be able to shake them out as easily as if those numbers were the typical, you know, speculative length that these guys are longer term players, and you can't, they're not, it's not like they're leveraged up and it's a small part of their portfolio. So it's hard to squeeze them out. But I agree with you. I think this is we haven't seen these numbers before.
They're record.
And so if you're buying the market now, you kind of feel like you're the last one in.
Right. And, you know, they've been long, you know, they've been that long for months now, and they're really, you know, the market hasn't performed. And Jim, as you mentioned, this last week, we started seeing the net length get paired. And WTI actually added some shorts finally to the market.
Yeah.
And some of the length was taken out, and in Brent, the same thing. Brent lost. The net length was down 38,000, which is a pretty big number. So I think that you definitely have some tired and disappointed longs in there. But I think the point you make, Jim, is really good, that you know, some of this length is here to stay, and they're not going to be easily shaken out.
Right, and the other thing that this brings up is, if you were to look at a like a contrarian view on this market, it would be that coming out of the summer, we're around $40. I mean, that's kind of, to me, the market just seems to have this 50 to 60 range built into it in a big way. And, you know, a lot of people expect us to be up at $60 at the end of the year. I think you have that view as well.
Yeah, right. I think if you look at what we talked about on the, you know, as we head into the second half and the market's deficit, I mean, these numbers are not a surprise to anybody. I mean, everyone has the same numbers. So, I mean, that's why we're holding here.
Yeah, and I agree with that too.
Despite the record inventories,
yes,
you know, we're just hanging in here.
And I agree with that view as well. But I'm just saying that if you thought, well, what's the view that people would really be shocked to see? And I think it's a lower price coming out of the summer, but
definitely, and that could happen. Definitely happen. Let's say, you know, OPEC doesn't roll over the agreement at the end of May. And let's say, you know, they're not going to roll over they don't roll over the agreement.
Right.
Today in Houston, I think it was the Iraqi minister and the Russian minister. It's big CERA week down there. Both said it's a little too premature to talk about a rollover. So, you know, if they don't roll it over, the market is obviously, some of this like this is going to get shaken out.
Right. And you know, that leads me right into my favorite part of the market is in the options world. And we're seeing an implied volatility of 23%, and we haven't seen these numbers since early 2014. And in June of 2014, we made an all-time low at 12.7%. But also coming out of June, the end of June, it was vols were up in the 50%, because obviously we had that big collapse in price, and that compares with the long-term average of 33.3. So it's a very, you know, as we said, the price has moved pretty much sideways once it bumped up. And I think the OPEC agreement put an effective floor on this market. So, you know, a lot of times the implied vol is driven by aggressive put buyers, but, you know, they probably weren't around. They're not around as much as they could be. But, you know, you think about the view 50 to 60, and that's exactly where we're seeing all the bigger strikes of open interest. So, for example, in the biggest open interest in the regular, we call them the LO options, that's the symbol, the WTI options, the June 60 call is over 50,000 open interest. That's a hefty number. And number two is December at 48,000. So you can see, and even SEP 60 calls there, those are the ones with the big open interest. So you can't buy those without a seller. So there's people on both sides, obviously. And because vols have declined, and prices haven't gotten up there, it's the sellers who are probably making the money right now, not the buyers. And part of some of those sellers are probably producers when they're financing their put purchases. They sometimes will look for calls to sell against it. And on the put side, it's all the 50 puts, April, May, June, SEP, DEIS, those are the ones with the bigger, you know, they're not in the 50,000, but they're more like 20 to 30,000 open interest on the 50 puts. So even though the option market, the vols are down, the volume's down, you can trace out sort of the consensus view by looking at those open interest numbers. And moving over to one of our favorites, that DEIS 18 call on Brent WTI, the flat call or the zero call, is now up to 54,700 in open interest.
Wow.
So that DEIS 18 calls total has got 76,500. And that's the import tax play, right?
So right.
If you bought that flat call, you're expecting WTI to trade above Brent. And that's just that's the number one option that's related to crude in terms of open interest.
Right. That's the border adjustment tax play, the import tax play.
Yeah. And you know, if you have, you know, you have commentary on that import tax every day, it's a go. It's how are they going to balance the budget if they don't have this tax, and then there's too many people against it. So it's a really, you know, if we were closer to having it enacted, I'm sure that market would be flying all over the place, but we're not quite there yet. So it keeps gaining in open interest, which is just shocking to me.
Well, as you said, people probably think they have some good information about whether it goes or not, and it changes every day. So, interestingly, that spread, which went from minus $2 to WTI just about flat or if not over, is now WTI down about $1.20.
Right, probably reflecting probabilities of that thing getting passed.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
It's interesting. You know, I was starting to think it could be a spec play, but it also could be a hedge. And if you think about who would get hurt by this spread, it would be, you know, together Brent and WTI. You'd say, okay, well, it would be a Brent producer or producer of oil tied to the price of Brent and a U.S. refiner, right? So the WTI price rally. So if you have a company that has that exposure, which there are a few out there, you'd think that would be a good play for them to that call would be a good buy for them to hedge against an import tax. But you know, who knows? I have no idea who actually bought that thing. And then finally, we talked about the curve, and people play the curve through option markets. We call them CSOs. They're the options on the spreads. And so the 1 month spread would be, say, you could buy a flat call on the June, July spread. And the options that we see with the most open interest happen to be for a while they were the minus 50 puts for 2017, and July through D's minus 50 puts still have like 12,000 to 17,000 open interest, but now we've moved up to the minus 25 puts. So July has about 15,000. Out through D's, you have anywhere from it's around 15,000 for the minus 25 puts in July, and then in Novi and D's. So that would be like Novi D spread, D Jan spread. The flat puts have got up to 19,000 open interest. So you can see it just keeps, the market seems to be getting a little more, confident that these draws are going to happen. Again, all the stuff that I'm talking about now in options is kind of mixed. It's feeding into what the consensus view is saying. So okay, what else, Andy? What else did I miss?
Well, just looking at, let's talk a little bit about prices. Right. I think it's we're in March right now. It's just, it's a shoulder month. There are big maintenances going on in Asia right now. The U.S. maintenances have by and large are coming to an end, will end by the middle of March. For this month, it's not all that interesting. I think the market will be hard pressed really to break out of the range. But the big question, Jim, is as you alluded to, is, as we start getting into closer to the period where it should draw, how is the market going to react? Is it right, discounted? Is it going to be this fast and furious rally? Is it going to be a herky jerky rally? Is it going to, there's a lot, I think that's the big, that's the big question. Of course, markets go up and down. And as we said, this market's gotten very comfortable, being in this range. I think it's going to look, it's definitely going to need for clarity. The big hinge is going to be what OPEC does. So, I think as we head into April and May, we're going to have to start seeing something from OPEC on the rollover to give the market a little more, at least somewhat more confidence. Until then, we may just stay range bound, which is not great, but
right. Yeah, I mean, we could stay in this range for a long time. I do worry, despite what I said about the passive index trading, I do worry that there's so much length in this managed money cohort that, you just feel like you'd be the last one in. I'm worried that even if bullish news came out, who's left to buy, right. On the other hand, if you start seeing stocks draw like we think they could, people might say, holy cow, let's get grandma out of her T-bills.
And we start seeing these crude stock draws every week on the on the DOEs,
right?
The market's going to get, it'll take notice of the, just how excited does it get.
I'm not sure either. I have to say one other thing that I've been looking at is this 10-year interest rate. It's right around 2.5%. And, if you go back to the high of the Reagan years, we've had this huge decline in interest rates. And even in 2008, we got down to 2.5%. 2009, we may have gotten a little bit below, but it was 2.5% was good support back then. And then when, we started doing the QE stuff, we blew through it on the downside. And now we're bouncing up against it. I think we were 2.5%. Pretty much for this year. I think around this year, last time we were probably around 2.5%. But if this thing starts, going above, breaks out of this resistance, this thing could fly up and then cause some problems with the stock market, and then I you know, it's, I don't see it happening, but it's out there. So I'm basically looking for what would cause the consensus view to be totally surprised, and that would be another area to keep an eye on, is how these the back end of the interest rate markets react. So, but there's a lot of economic momentum. You know, it's hard to we've got more people at work this year than last year, and a lot of those people are driving. So, you know, it's consensus view may be actually correct at around 60 at the end of the year. Okay, anything you want to add, Andy?
No, I think we covered a lot of ground, and you know, let's hope that the market does find a way to break out of this range.
Yeah,
one way or the other, and but you know, for now, it's at least during the next, you know, during March, it's really hard to you know, foresee it making a really dynamic move unless, you know, something changes in the, you know, over the next couple of weeks.
And I'll be interested to take a look at the EIA stuff tonight, their monthly report when it gets. What time does that come out? Around 1?
I think around 12 or 1 o'clock.
12 or 1. Okay. Very good. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to end this podcast with a disclaimer. This podcast should be construed as market commentary, merely observing economic, political, or market conditions. Is not intended to refer to any particular trading strategy. Information contained in this podcast is accurate to the best of our knowledge, but is not guaranteed. This is not an offer to buy or sell any derivatives. And we'll see you next month.